Good afternoon, Shadow Hills. Well, we're back. I'm thinking we're going to rename this podcast The Horse's Mouth, because the information you get here is coming from the horse's mouth. This is the official information. You don't get it off Nextdoor or any of these other social media sites. Kim Fuller is representing the board and is telling you the way it is. So, Kim, how is it?
Good afternoon. I am back here today to hopefully explain in a better way what's going on with the three proposed rule changes, because I have gotten a lot of questions based upon what I consider some inaccurate misinformation that's floating around. So maybe I can put some of that to rest, but no question, if I'm not doing that really well, just write to me and I'll write you individually about what certain things mean. So let's go through this, but in the overall picture, let me explain. The proposed rule changes, one of which is about guests, has nothing to do with the fact that the state order is you can't have guests at the moment. This is a proposed rule change based upon the fact that when we're in normal operations, this is how we define guests. If you look through CC&Rs and our rules and regs, we have sections talking about guests. Well, this is when we're normal, when people can come and go. The state order is still in effect, and that is you can't have any guests and you can't gather. And I'm going to talk about the gathering change in a moment. So keep that in mind, that this proposed change is really once we're operational. So that's what that's going to be about, what's normally going to happen on a day-to-day basis. But the stay-at-home order is in effect. You are not supposed to have guests in your home. Now, let's go through these three proposed changes and why we're here. The first one, about definition of guests. This came about because CC&R rule section 8.1.1 only talks about guests when they're below the age of 55. They never talked about guests that are above the age of 55. Now, think about that for a moment. That creates some issues for us. If currently a resident, a homeowner, is responsible for their guests, you're responsible for their behavior, you're responsible for any misbehavior. So if a guest commits a violation, runs through a stop sign, the homeowner gets the ticket, and then the homeowner would have to go get reimbursed from the guest. We, the HOA, have no jurisdiction over a guest as far as citing them and going to collect money. They could just tell us, go jump off a cliff. I mean, what are we going to do about that? What we all agreed to when we moved here was that we would abide by certain rules and regulations because we want that. I moved here because I don't want my neighbor to be able to swear at me across the fence. And I think that's a good thing for all of us. We come here to get along. So these rules that were set up about guests, it was funny, they never talked about somebody over the age of 55. So if somebody's over the age of 55, the question then became, because it came up, who's responsible? Who do I cite when a guest is committing violations? How long can they stay? There's nothing in our rules that say how long a guest over the age of 55 can stay. So literally, a person could stay forever and not be a permanent resident and just live somewhere. That's possible. And currently, the rules for people under 55, they cannot stay here for more than 60 days and nights. So if you have family staying with you for 2 months, at the end of that two-month period, they have to leave. And that is a protection that all of us agree that we don't want every home with family members that move in around us. And all of a sudden, now we have a community of family members and relatives and kids all running around forever. We all agree that that's not going to happen, not without changing the rules. So the question then becomes, person over the age of 55, are they a permanent resident? Are they a guest? Do they have to qualify as a permanent resident? Are they allowed the transponder? If we don't have any rules and regs, then somebody could just get a transponder. Do they get a resident ID card? So if there's no restrictions and no definitions for somebody over the age of 55, what do? So that became the issue. And it came up because of a case. This after all these years, it just comes up. Naturally, if somebody over the age of 55 comes into the community through the gate and is a guest of somebody, well, that person now registered the guest. But what if a resident says, oh, I want to get a resident ID card for my friend who lives in Sun City, Palm Desert, because he wants a transponder so he can come and go as he pleases, that he can go to the weight room in the morning when it's only residents, that he gets the benefit of golf at a lower rate. You see where this goes? It keeps going. Well, I don't have any restriction. I can't say anything. Right now, a resident could put down anybody over the age of 55 as a permanent guest, and we have to look at that and say, well, what does this mean for us? So this rule change, which is really a proposed new rule, basically defines that everybody is as a guest, whether you're under 55 or over 55, the same rules apply. Namely, you can be here for 2 months, and after that you need to become either a permanent resident or vacate the community. Now, in order to get permanent resident status, you have to get board approval. And that's because, I'll give you some examples. We had somebody request permanent resident status for a person that would come in here twice a week during the day. And their goal was they wanted a resident ID card so they could go to the gym to work out in the morning when it was residents only. It was a total abuse of what the rules and regs are all about. Well, people try this stuff. So this new proposed rule is to simply say everybody, whether you're under 55 or over 55, that we have it in place as to what your classification is and who's responsible. And if you're no longer a guest, you have to become a permanent resident. And if you don't qualify as a permanent resident, even if you're over 55, you then have to vacate the community. Now, this proposed rule change has nothing to do with the state order. This has to do with when we are operational under normal conditions. The state code is still, we're not allowed to have guests at the moment. Hopefully that clears up guests. Okay, next one, political signs. Now, this is the interesting one based upon the fact that some people have questioned the fact that the state code prohibits, free speech, political signs. We understand that. We don't believe that means, the board does not believe that means at the moment, that somebody is allowed to put out unlimited number of political signs in their front yard. I'm not sure that the residents here want to drive by and see 50 signs out front of somebody's yard. And it also doesn't mean, in our opinion, that you're allowed to put up a flag for a politician or a sign all year round, that it never comes down. Well, many people are giving me this argument. I shouldn't say many, less than 10. And because they argue this with their constitutional rights, my point is the board has voted a certain guideline, and the reason for putting this now before you is to get your feedback as to what you want. We just want to hear from you so we know what to do here. Currently, the board is not allowing signs and flags to be up all year long. We're not going to do it. We are currently not allowing more than 3 signs. So if you have 6 signs, I write to you and ask you to take 3 down. Everybody's been very cooperative. I thank you very much. But there's a few who believe they have additional rights here. The additional rights question is for a different venue. That's not us. We all need to get together, decide what we want as a community, and then that's what we're going to put in force. So what we need to hear from you is this. Then there's a couple of different decisions to make. One, How many signs do you want allowed up before each election? How many? Do you want 3, 2, 1, 5, 10? You all need to write to the board and say, number of signs, I think we don't need more than 5. Okay. This just gets down to what does everybody want? The second part of that equation is, can the signs be different or the same? Or the one sign per candidate? My good buddy from the board, Erica, and I'm using your name, Erica, because you know what? You and I connected. She and I philosophically disagreed on a lot, but we also agreed on a lot. And she brings to me sometimes a point of view that I know that sometimes made sense. And Erica writes to me and says, what does it matter if the signs are all the same? Don't we just care how many are up? Now, that had a good point. That caught me thinking a little bit. Maybe that would be easier to enforce. So one of the questions to write to us, do you all care that if somebody in an election puts up 3 of the same sign, is that okay? I mean, if the limit is so many signs, whatever it is, 4 signs, 5 signs, 3 signs, if the limit's 4 signs, if all 4 are the same thing, does it matter? Or do we need to also check as to each one individually? It's an interesting idea. I think we need to hear from you. What do you care? Residents, what do you want? If all the residents here don't care that they're the same, I'm not sure the board's going to care. I think this is a resident question. Now, the third part of this is, how long are the signs to be up? Now, the board has voted on a guideline for the current election based upon past rules. We're putting this before you to ask, what do you want? Do you want signs to go up 30 days in advance, 45 days in advance, 60 days in advance? How about they stay up all year and never come down? Kind of like the neighbor with the Christmas tree lights. They're up forever. They're always up early. How's that? This then also becomes a question for you. What do all of you want to live with? What do you like? I mean, this is your place. This is our place here. So what do we want? And we have to, I understand nobody, we're not all going to agree, but hopefully we get to a point that we are respectful of the fact if 70% of the residents go, we only want them up for 30 days and then we want them to come down because we don't have to deal with this all year long. Well, then I think that's where it's going to go. But if the majority of you think that 45 days is better for some reason, let me know. Some of you might say, don't do it for 2 weeks. Okay, so tell us what you think. So the political sign issue is based upon you giving us input so we know what to do for the future. This really isn't going to come into play until the next election. The current guideline of 3 signs, 1 per candidate, is in play right now. Well, the election's going to be over by a week later after the board meeting. It'll be over. So this will come into play from now on. So let us know, and then we know what to put down, and everybody will know what we're doing. Now, the question on the constitutionality of this, not our venue. Board is going to listen to what the residents want in their community. And then if a few homeowners wish to take it to a different venue, that's up to you. I'm only going to go with the guideline from the board based upon your input. The last part of these rule changes is party walls. Now, the party wall is defined in our CCNRs as the wall between 2 private property owners. It is not a wall between a homeowner and the HOA, a homeowner and a common property. Example, when you drive down Sun City Boulevard, there is a wall separating you have the road and you have some landscape area, and then you have a wall separating the road area from private property. That wall is dealt with differently than the party walls. It's a different section in our CCNRs, which is totally accounted for. Now, the interesting part is, in the case of a party wall, if the wall's damaged, each party has to pay half to fix it, you know, an act of God kind of thing. We're not dealing with responsibility. I'm going to talk about them in a minute. But those of you who have a wall that is on the border between common property and your private property, you are required to keep and maintain the inside of that wall, the wall that faces your private property. You have to paint it and maintain it. But if an act of God knocks down that wall, the CC&R says the HOA has to replace it at their cost. So the homeowner doesn't pay for the replacement of a wall unless the homeowner is responsible. So if a homeowner is doing backyard work, for instance, and drives a tractor through the wall, that becomes their fault. They're going to have to fix the wall. But if it's just something, who knows what, then if the homeowner's not responsible, the HOA will replace the wall. Now, party walls became different. And this came about, we had to come up with this because this is a case that came up. And our first reaction was, many times there's situations that come up between homeowners that are not under the jurisdiction of the HOA. It's really something between the homeowners, private, civil matter. And we thought the issue of a private property wall would be an issue between two private property owners. Well, it turns out our CC&Rs, because it hasn't come up before, because we're kind of new and walls haven't fallen over yet, we're required to set up an arbitration system for a dispute between two homeowners that share a wall, if it's about the wall. So, example, one homeowner looks at the wall and it's not straight anymore. It's leaning over. Now there's an issue because somebody wants to know what's happening with the wall and who's going to fix the wall and what do we do now? So after we then review the CC&Rs, it turns out that if one of those homeowners writes to the board and requests, we have to have an arbitration system in place. That's what this section is now about. We have to define it. What are we going to do? So there's different ways to go about this, but there's no question we have to do something. According to CC&Rs, we have to do something. Now, the CC&Rs do not define and say that the HOA has to be the arbiter. That's true. That came to my attention, and I agree with that point. The HOA could come up with a system that says, if we get these cases, the arbitration system is the two homeowners have to go hire an arbitrator. And then that's it. Go do it and leave us alone. Now, I'm not real sympathetic to that process. I have been to arbitration several times. I don't know how many of you have been to arbitration several times. It costs several thousands of dollars. I've not been out of an arbitration yet for under $4,000. I would like to think of a more efficient, cost-efficient method than requiring homeowners on a dispute of the wall that are going to be paying lawyers $3,000 to $6,000 in order to resolve the problem. I'd like to think that the HOA was trying to find a way that the first step would be a little lower cost and quicker. So part of the language here is to get to the fact that the HOA would act as an arbiter. Could be in the end we don't, but that's what's been proposed. But for us to act as an arbiter, we don't know what's wrong with the wall. We don't know what caused the wall. So the question then is, we need an engineering report, but we also don't want to chase the two homeowners for the payment. And we don't think the HOA should have to pay for the engineering report to find out what's wrong. Now, somebody did bring to my attention, this was a very good point by a homeowner. Okay, we get the engineering report. We got half the money from one homeowner, half the money from another homeowner. And the engineering report comes by and says, resident A is fully responsible. They planted a tree too close. The tree got big. It's pushing the wall over. And the wall needs to be repaired, fixed, straightened out, and the tree needs to be removed. Well, homeowner B is not responsible at all. And this person wrote to me and said, why should homeowner B have to pay for that? And I go, you have a great point there. So one of the alterations that I think will be submitted, we might be, as part of the process, ask for a deposit from both homeowners for 100% of the report. And then whichever one is responsible, each party will pay their fair share based upon their responsibility. So if somebody's 80% responsible, they pay 80% of the report and the balance of the money refunded. So that was a suggestion which I kind of liked. I said the non-responsible people should not have to pay for what the responsible party has done. So what this party wall is about is we have to do something. We're required to by our CCNRs, and we have to come up with something. If anybody has a better way to do this, if somebody has some efficient, quick, cost-effective way of resolving this dispute, let me know. So far, this was the board's first stab at putting a proposal forward without involving outside professional arbitrators. Now, even when you get done with this process, if you're, and by the way, this has come up because it's come up. We have a dispute over a wall falling over. So we have to do something. So the even if we go through this dispute and we get all done, make a decision, guess what? The two parties can still sue each other. That they can still do that. We have nothing to do with that. But this might be the first step to resolve it quick and easy without a big attorney expense. So the method, the arbitration method that the board is going to propose at this point is that they will follow the covenants committee's process. We'd get an engineering report. They'd have a hearing before the covenants committee. The covenants committee would make a decision. The two parties would then have 15 days to appeal, or 10 days to appeal, I think, and they could appeal to the board. And then the board's decision's final. So the first stab at the board on trying to make this work efficiently and cost-effective is to just follow our current covenants committee's guideline, its process. That way it's the same for everybody and hopefully minimize the cost impact when these things come on. Now, a wall falling over is going to have to be dealt with. I mean, eventually it's going to fall over. So we have to, we're required to go in and deal with this. So those, hopefully that explains those three rules. If I didn't do that well again, let me know. Now let's get back to, many people have written about the new gathering rules coming out by the county, came out by the state, I should say. Let me preface this. There is no consistent logic to all of this. Everybody who writes me who says, well, if we can do this, why can't we do that? I give everybody the same order. It's because the county and the state say you can do this, but you can't do that. I don't know why they say it's okay to have people in a fitness center, but you can't have anybody play pool, play billiards. I don't know. I don't have time to call the governor and hope for a phone call. I just don't. I'm just spending my time reading this stuff, and some of it says, you may not play cards. It's that simple. It says, you may not play billiards. Okay, that's what it says. Now, at the same time, the state order says you cannot have guests. That's what it says right now. So somebody says, well, then why is it okay for four of us to sit at Shadows? I said, because the state says you can. It's a carved-out exception. No, we didn't make up the exception for Shadows in order to try to make money. We'd like to open Shadows with more people, you know, but we got to be health and safety conscious. So what the state does is, the entire order is stay at home, no visitors, no gathering. And then piece by piece, they carve out an exception. Now, the new gathering rule exception, which the board will be talking and vote on tomorrow, is not some terrific exception, just to let you know. Don't think all of a sudden the door's wide open. The exception is this. Three households may gather. Only three. You may only gather outdoors. You may not gather indoors, preferably for 2 hours or less. And the three households that have a gathering may not meet with any other household at any other time in the future until this order is changed. So what it means is three households, you decide. That's why I said the other day, pick your friends wisely. Somebody said, what does that mean? I got to pick. is you only get to be with three households. It doesn't mean your three households are today one set of households, and then tomorrow it's another set of three and another set of three. The order is real specific. Three households, that's it. You cannot be with any other household into the future until they change this. So pick your three households. You may get together in your backyard, only in your backyard, while you wear masks. Masks are required, except while you eat or take a drink, then masks go back on. And you may not meet with anybody else. And you still can't have a guest in your home. That's the exception. Well, we're going to look at that tomorrow. I don't know of a reason the board's not going to vote this in. I mean, the state has said we can. I think the only reason is if the county shuts us down again, you know, moves everything back. So it's a very limited exception as far as gatherings. So if you and your two neighbors, if you're buddies, you three households could get together in your backyard with a mask on. Now, that's better than what it was. For months, my neighbors on both sides of me, who we like very much, they're from Minnesota, actually, both sides. I got a sister on one side and a brother on the other. Isn't that something? So and their families. Well, we would talk to them, but we would sit on our side and have our little mask on, and they'd sit on their side, and because we couldn't violate the gathering orders. This would at least allow us to kind of sit in the same backyard for a little while, but we still can't sit inside. So that's the exception for the gathering order. Other than that, no guests, no gatherings, nothing indoors yet. Shadows is open with limited capacity. That's an exception carved out. No guests for anything. There's no guests for golf, no guests for Shadows. No, you cannot use your guest card to get into Shadows. The key is guests, no guests, no guests. No guests for fitness center, tennis, nothing. Until we get this going a little further, there's no guests. We're still health, safety conscious. Things are still around, and we're trying to make sure everybody's okay. In the meantime, hopefully that clears up some questions. I wish you well. Stay safe, stay healthy. Take care.
And if things like this interest you and you'd like to be a bigger part of the process, there's still time to apply for board positions for next year. Kim, how many are we going to elect next year?
We are going to elect two. And since everybody keeps asking me, yes, I am going to run for the board again.
Oh, my God.
I am going to do this again. And people have asked me, the first question is, my lovely bride said, she didn't even ask me why. And there's multiple reasons, but part of it is I don't like quitting in the middle of something, and we're not done. And there's some issues, part of which is closed session information that we're not done with. Part of it's this whole Frontier install. I don't know that we'll be done. Part of it's this whole COVID thing. I'm not sure we'll be out of it for a while. One of the weaknesses of a board, which I've said multiple times, is continuity. History and continuity. And the more people you can get to commit to finish something, the quicker, more efficient it becomes. I will also tell you it's easily because the committees are phenomenal. I like working with them. They do a great job, which minimizes my workload, and the board members have been terrific. This last couple of years, it's been just great. And so I enjoy that discussion very much. I like the dialogue. So, yes, I am going to run again. I am very hopeful. I am trying to convince Linda Austin to run again because that would be most helpful for all of us. So I'm going to put out all of you, write to her and tell her to do it again. She already knows what's going on, and it will be most helpful in order for us to go forward with some issues we still got to deal with. So I'll look forward to it, hopefully. Now, if everybody just hates what I've done here in the last year, it'll be simple. You won't vote for me, and I'll move on.
So, breaking news. You heard it here first. And so there'll be two seats open for next year. What's the deadline for applying? Do you know offhand?
I hope it wasn't today because I haven't turned it in yet.
I thought it's the middle of November.
I think it's November 13.
Yeah.
I think you got to have documents in by November 13.
So if this interests you and you'd like me to be interviewing you next year instead of Kim, there's still plenty of time to get your application in. So until next time, be safe. Bye-bye.